Ars Electronica 2008. A new cultural economy.
Zunächst Paul Keller, der eben ganz kurzfristig sich bereit erklärt hat, dafür nochmal ganz vielen und herzlichen Dank für Jennifer Urban einzuspringen. Er wird über Archives, Fans and Copyright sprechen. Paul Keller ist Senior-Projektleiter an dem Amsterdamer Think Tank Knowledge Land und gleichzeitig Organisator und Betreuer des iCommons Space, gleichzeitig jemand, der vergleichende Politikwissenschaften, Comparative Political Science, an der University of Amsterdam studiert und 2002 abgeschlossen hat. Er wird jetzt eben über Archivbildung, Fans und Copyright-Probleme sprechen.
Okay, vielen Dank für die Einleitung. Vielen Dank auch für die Einladung hier nach Linz an Joey und das ARS-Team. Ich werde den Rest meiner Präsentation auf Englisch halten, auch das Deutsch meine Muttersprache, aber diesen ganzen Wortschatz hierfür habe ich mir auf Englisch und auf Holländisch angeeignet und bin da im Deutschen nicht so sicher drin. It was just said, I've been asked on Tuesday to come here and speak about, as it was called then, media, fans and copyright, and I've changed that a little bit to archives, fans and copyright. I'm usually not speaking about this, so this is a bit of an experiment, but let's see how that goes. I'm starting this off with a sentence which I found, and I translated that myself just now, in a letter by the Dutch Ministry of Economic Affairs to the Second Chamber of Parliament, which deals with convergence of telecommunication services. But they actually infused a great deal of information and thoughts and issues around intellectual property, around copyright into that letter, which was somewhat surprising because, like, from the cover page, it didn't look like that. And there's a very interesting sentence in there which, in the essence, basically says, or it kind of like points to an existing problem, namely that existing right holders don't use the rights because they're insecure, as they say here, or they haven't figured out what they want to do, as one might think, or even in my experience, it's usually because they have this misguided idea that somebody's going to come and pay them shitloads of money for their rights at some point in the future, and as long as that person doesn't show up in front of their door, they won't use those rights. As long as these don't use the rights and don't allow others to use these rights, we are risking, in the worst case, stagnation, economic stagnation, I guess they mean, probably in a small sector, but anyway, that's pretty harsh words for the Ministry of Economic Affairs of a country sending that to Parliament. And I might agree with that, and I'm going to outline that in the rest of my presentation. What I don't really agree with is their conclusion so far. There's no reason to conclude that this is the case, because in a number of subjects, in a number of fields, this exactly seems to be the case. And my best experience with this comes from this project which we do, or which we are involved in at Knowledge Land, which is called Bilder für die Zukunft, or Images for the Future, which is a fairly large, in European scale at least, digitization project. It is the attempt to digitize the entire audiovisual archives of the Netherlands. There's 150 million euros of investment from the state in that, in order to digitize, and I don't know the numbers, but basically all the audiovisual archives of the public broadcasters in the Netherlands. It's been started 2 years ago, and it hasn't had very much visibility so far, because mainly what they're doing right now is setting up the production lines to actually physically digitize that stuff. On the other hand, they have an enormous problem, because copyright in the Netherlands, of course, doesn't allow for granting rights which are not known yet. Nobody in the 50s or 60s or 70s knew anything about the internet, maybe very few people, but in any case, so these rights were not granted, so they might sit on the material. They've gotten €150 million of money to digitize it and to make it available online, but they don't have the right to make it online. What that results in is that there's more of their material currently of this project, which employs like 250 people uploaded by complete strangers to YouTube, than available on their website, which is a fairly big problem if you look at it. There is like the state paying 150 million euros to catalog these assets, to digitize them in the best ways they can do, to make them available. They do this, they sit on this, they store it on their servers, and they can't make it available. The popular stuff goes back to YouTube, because that's what people care enough about to upload to YouTube. That's the popular stuff which people will want to see. Other stuff might end up on the Pirate Bay or whatever, and all the stuff in between, which isn't popular, but which makes an archive in the sense that it's complete and that it's cross-referenced and that it is tells like doesn't only contain the popular stuff. That stuff is just sitting on their servers and is at the moment not accessible. Which is, if you look at it, even more scary, because they are aware of this problem. The people who run this project, the person who runs the audiovisual archives of the Netherlands, in a conference we organized in April of this year, basically told this story. Sometimes some of our material appears on YouTube, and then we go there and we ask. Then they go to the people who are the rights holders, which are the public broadcasters, and they say, since it's on YouTube, can we also put it online? And the rights holders will tell them no, because we haven't given any permission to YouTube either. Well, are you going to sue YouTube then? No, we're not, because basically we're not that insane to sue YouTube, because we have some expectation of generating some revenue from them. So there's YouTube or Google with that bully position on the one hand side, maybe on the other hand, pirate networks who pick up some of that material and make it available. But the people who are actually paid and are probably able to do this best and most complete, they don't have the possibility to actually make this stuff online, what they are paid for. So it's quite a bit of an insane situation if you look at that closely. So much about archives. And now the thing or the aspect of that whole thing which I was supposed to talk about is were fans in this thing. And there is actually lots of examples out there for of pages, of internet sites, of initiatives who try to build up archives, make them accessible. There's this initiative which also happens to be Dutch, which is called Docs Online, and they have the ambition to be the primary distribution channel for documentary, quality documentary movies for everybody, and to enable, as they say here, the direct contact between artists or documentary makers and their public. Now, unfortunately, it doesn't really work. Looks like crap, doesn't work on my Mac, and has about 26 films or something which I could find on it. It builds itself as the premier destination for documentary movies, and it is not. Let's face it. One of the most frustrating moments in my work, which happens once in a while, if I see people writing business plans for some video on demand service or some audiovisual archive, and they do something like a market study, and then they only look at the legal spectrum of the market. So they won't look at the Pirate Bay, they won't look on any of the other pirate networks, they just go and have this as something and say okay, this is an interesting business model, and that's an interesting business model, and what YouTube does is an interesting business model, and what Kellogg's does is an interesting business model, because once in a while they give away two movies with a pack of cornflakes and whatever. But they won't look at the Pirate Bay, they won't look at any of the pirate things which basically are responsible for probably 90% of the high-definition video contact which is out there on the internet at the moment. And that's, of course, not a market survey. That's basically willful ignorance, or however you want to call it. Because if you look at it, it's exactly these networks which make the best archives at the moment. And this is a heavily censored screenshot of one of these more private BitTorrent sites, BitTorrent Tracker, which is a closed community which specializes in art house movies and documentaries, and for obvious reasons I've tried to censor it a little bit, because I don't like censorship. I've used the colors of Ars Electronica here to make it a little bit more in line with the other visuals. But the key point here, and this is a search result for looking for documentary movies which are made in the Netherlands at that point, and that lists, as you can see at the bottom, 72 things at the moment. That's about three times the amount of movies on that Dutch website, which tries to gather all the world's documentary movies. Obviously, most of them in much better quality. Obviously, most of them more easy accessible. Obviously, most of them better referenced and stuff like that. And they play on any platform. If you look at that, and this is a look at the statistics of the same website, It's pretty amazing what goes into these kind of sites as investment from fans. And investment here is not something monetary, it's mainly time and it's energy, it's bandwidth investment. If you look at here, there are 45,359 torrents available, of whom, if I look here, 30,000, so two-thirds about are movies. And they list that, you can even see there's 129 HD movies. One of the very fascinating things about this website was this thing, if you compare the process of standard setting here and the process of standard setting in projects like that Images for the Future, where they lock up people in commissions in rooms and they debate, like specialists debate endlessly how to encode stuff and how that has to be. If you see here at some moment they came to the conclusion, okay, there's people uploading HD stuff, we need a minimum standard because they have minimum standards, you throw it in a forum, 3 days later you have consensus, and this is like probably the best balance between quality and bandwidth you can achieve for an HD codec at the moment to make that downloadable. Merck's much more efficient. You can see a lot of other things here. There's 23,132 people at the moment seeding, offering files for upload to other people. And that is quite, and this is something which is invitation only and is not very easy to find. You can see like there's lots more people. There's like 16,000 users at the moment. Don't know how that matches with 23,000 seeders, but anyway, there's more than 250,000, almost 250,000 comments, so there's a lot of investment by the community in this thing. There is this being like the underground, you encounter like lots of silly smileys down there in the corner, and you see that there's at any given moment, I don't know when I made this screenshot, there's about 4,000 people active at the moment on this network. You also see that there's like a large majority of people offer stuff to upload and a very small part of the people actually download. That has a bit to do with bandwidth ratios on this website, which actually require you to upload something and share for something downloaded. What's not happening, or maybe some more, like they make screenshots for all the movies, actually like they are, the movie descriptions are probably better than everything you find in any of the other online legit websites which offer movies for download and something. There's like, they document everything from like the exact codecs which are used. So there's a lot of work of love which goes in here, which is basically fandom. This is, keep in mind, this is a website for art house movies and for documentaries, has very strict rules against the use of any material which is produced by Bollywood or Hollywood, so they actually have a community standard, and mostly it is for the love of the works what people do. What they don't do is take money for anything. So there's no money in there. They at some points they do take donations for covering their hosting costs, but it's not something like, hence we have this great library, we're going to monetize it at the moment. The interesting experiment I would think would be if these people somehow secretly figured out how to take money, because I would obviously pay probably for most of the movies I've downloaded or maybe downloaded from this website. I would have paid €5 if I could have. I can't. The problem is they have the exact perfect movie distribution platform. It finds stuff you can find nowhere. It finds stuff which I had to go to Argentina for to get a VHS copy in Spanish on NTSC, and I bought it anyway because I liked that movie so much, but this is here a mouse click away, literally. But you can't pay for it. The infrastructure is here, built by fans, but because the rights are usually with distributors, and the rights are so complex, and it's such a mess, such a nightmare what we have to deal with, like even that this infrastructure is in place, is working, is not really harming anybody at the moment, probably a contested statement, but anyway, and could probably be used to generate quite a good amount of revenue for like the filmmakers of often very obscure and very small films in this thing, but it is not possible because like it is simply impossible to clear the rights. My understanding is that you are going to come a little bit with a proposal more in the field of music, which might make this possible, so I won't skip too much ahead of that. But so this is the role, and because like the internet has leveled the playing field so much, and especially peer-to-peer technologies like BitTorrent have done this to media distributions in ways we couldn't really imagine 7 years ago, or at least I couldn't imagine 7 years ago, this this is the reality we're looking at, which is like, which is perfect, which is probably the movie Into the Earth's dream, but it can't be, the system is impossible to legalize it in any way. Like, probably the only thing would be if we could all disappear who are on that tracker for like 5 years, like all pay our 5 euros and then have that big bag of euros and then go, okay, now you have the possibility of making this legal and then you get this bag of money which we collected for you in the past, or you won't. But people are waiting for this thing to happen. The mountains of money to come for the content they won't give away right now because they don't trust others, or they haven't figured it out, or they generally don't trust like the amorphous group of people out there who can make this happen quite efficiently. Another example about archives, which shows a little bit what you can do if you don't pay too much attention to copyright. This is probably a legal thing in the contrast to the other thing. It's called OXDB. It's a database project or an archive project run by a couple of friends of mine in Berlin, who've run pirate cinema nights there as well, and who've built in the course of the years this kind of like archive system, which stores lots of movies, and but you can't download them. They will only show you like search results of 5 second clips. So they argue that citations, and that's fine. But they've made, and that's pretty unique still in the world of archives. They figured out how to full text search almost all the movies, because in the pirate networks you usually have the film and then you have time synchronized texts, also known as subtitles. They are there, and these are searchable text files where you can just, and they are time synchronized, so you can look, search for a word like Amsterdam in that thing, and this will show you scenes from all the movies they have in their thing, where the word Amsterdam is mentioned, or here, as it's from The Wire, it's called Hamsterdam, actually, kind of the bastardization of Baltimore for the Amsterdam drug policies. Anyway, so they have this, they've built, like, this is two or three people in Berlin who've actually coded something which can full text search automatically. They don't have to index that by hand. It's all run by scripts. In all the movies, basically, they can find. And they will show you, like, if this was live, you could click on anything, and it will show you, like, 5 seconds, like, the 2.5 seconds before the word and the 2.5 seconds behind the word of that thing. Play that, and that's all you can do. You can't download these films. They are stored somewhere, but they are not accessible. They've also done this, like, they've done this amazing stuff. They've then mapped, like, geographic names in the subtitles to maps, or here they have actually timelines where you can see or can't see, actually, probably on that screens. This little yellow things is where the word Amsterdam appears in that fragment of that TV series, and so on and so on. So basically, the key argument I'm wanting to make here is that copyright, at least the complexities created over the years in how copyrights get assigned and to what classes of economic actors they get distributed, has actually brought us in a position where we're actually not able to make the best use of the culture we have at the moment. And we're harming people, and we're harming the people in whom's name the system of copyright was created, namely the directors of documentary movies, or the directors of art house movies, and probably a good deal of musicians, as we're going to hear after that. And it somehow reminds me a little bit like what has happened to like the copyright system. If like the regulation concerning communication and would have been influenced in the same way as copyright by the media industries, by the postal services, my inbox would probably look like this today. Like, I get mail delivered once a day by the postman, from the post room at 11:08 yesterday, and today he was here or she was here at 10:07. And that's kind of like the arbitrary restrictions, like this system of this convoluted system which copyright law has become, has placed on the way we deal, or we have access to culture at the moment, and we need to change that. And if this was the case, like this, if the mail lobby had been able to have this, we probably would have a thriving network of pirate mail networks underground, which would be like by invitation only. Okay, thanks so much.